I'm guessing there is a houseplant or two or 10 in your life. So here's a question. Do you talk to them? And do they ever talk back? Well, that might not be as crazy as it sounds. Steve Paulson is here to explain.
If you're old enough, you might remember a book called The Secret Life of Plants. It was a bestseller during the heyday of New Age pseudoscience, and it made a bunch of wild claims.
In alchemical union with the four genii of creation, air, fire, water, and earth, plants turn the desert into a garden.
Plants respond to people's thoughts, even feelings. They can predict storms and earthquakes. They prefer classical music to rock.
Absorbing light from the sun and nourishment from the waters, sprouting plants through billions of tiny lips give forth oxygen to purify the air and invigorate the earth.
Well, today there is a group of maverick plant scientists who are once again making far-fetched claims about plants. Except this time, it's based in real science. If you follow this stuff, one name that comes up a lot is Monica Galliano, an Italian evolutionary ecologist who's now at the University of Sydney in Australia. She had a hypothesis that plants actually have the capacity to learn and remember. And to test it, she took a plant you might have heard of, Mimosa pudica. It's often called the sensitive plant, because if you touch it, the leaves instantly close. And she devised a series of ingenious experiments.
I basically built a little contraption that allowed me to drop the plants. Drop them from a little height of maybe 15 centimeters, so it's not too high. And when they fall, they land in a really softy padded base. So I always say the disclaimer is that no plants were hurt in the process of these experiments and no plants were killed in the process of these experiments.
So you did this over and over. You kept dropping the plants repeatedly.
Constantly, continuously for 60 times. And then there will be a big pause and I let them rest. And then I do it again.
Galliano had a basic question. How long would it take these plants to realize there was no actual threat when they were dropped? Therefore, no reason to close their leaves. It seemed like it would take a while.
But actually, the plants already were reopening their leaves after the first 3 to 6 drops of those 60. And that's like within a few minutes, basically. They knew exactly what was going on. They're like, oh my God, this is really annoying, but it actually, it doesn't mean anything. So I'm just going to not bother closing, or even better, I closed at the beginning because I didn't know what this was. But now I got it. I understand that there is no threat coming. So I'm just going to reopen my leaves because when my leaves are open, I can eat light.
What's so striking about the way Galliano describes this experiment are the words she uses. She says the plants understand and learn there is no longer a threat. And there's something else she wanted to know. Can they actually remember what they've learned? So she left these same plants alone for a month and then did another round of drops. And guess what? This time, they didn't bother closing their leaves.
So that is definitely memory. And that is the same kind of experiment that we would do if this was a bee or a mouse or anything. So for me, to use the word memory and learning feels totally appropriate. And I know that some people, some of my colleagues, accuse me of being anthropomorphizing, but actually there's nothing anthropomorphic about these. These are terms that refers to certain processes.
And you are not using these words like learning and remembering metaphorically. I mean, you mean this literally.
Yes, because that's what they are.
There was one other question Galliano had. Do plants actually have the capacity to make choices? So she devised another experiment, this time with peas. She built them a maze with two different paths.
The test is actually make a choice between left and right. What are you going to go for? And the choice is based on what you might gain if you choose one side or the other.
And the enticement? On one side, the sound of water.
And of course, they want water, so they will use the signal to follow that arm of the maze and trying to find the source of water, which is what they're after.
So you're saying plants can hear water?
Oh, yeah, of course.
How did you determine that?
Well, initially, it's just a matter of asking the question, is sound relevant to the life of plants? And as we did, we have discovered, of course, that not only plants emit their own sounds.
They also hear sounds. And Galeano isn't just talking about electrical signals. She means actual audible sounds. What kind of sounds do they make?
Well, the one that we recorded sounded like, we call them clicks because it was the closest thing that we could have. And this is where language might fail, but we call them clicks at this stage. But then we also knew and worked out that, yep, plants not only produce their own sound, which is amazing, but of course they are listening to the sounds.
You are describing a level of intelligence here in these plants that,
yeah,
it's pretty sophisticated.
Yeah. Basically, they don't have neurons, they don't have a brain, which is often what we assume is the base for all of these behaviors, but they seem to be doing the same things. Really, that's what it is, and it belongs to the cognitive realm. So that's why I define all of this work as cognitive ecology.
Of course, this is a very controversial position among scientists, and the common criticism of your views is that an organism needs a brain, or at least a nervous system, to be able to learn or remember. Plants don't have neurons. Are you saying that maybe neurons are not the be-all and end-all that we make them out to be?
Well, what I'm saying is that science is full of assumptions. They're like axioms, you know, like you don't question that one. But in fact, who said the brain and the neurons are essential for any form of intelligence or learning or cognition or any of those? It's like, who decided that? That's the thing. Can you, as a scientist, create the space for these others expressing their own, in this case, plantness, instead of expecting them to become animal-like?
Now, here is where the whole subject of plantness gets even more interesting. There's an emerging discipline of what's called vegetal consciousness. The idea is that plants don't just have the capacity to learn and remember and make choices. They actually have some inner awareness, maybe even an emotional life. This is definitely not the view of most scientists. And I have to say, when I first heard this, it sounded kind of crazy. But the more I looked into the literature, and not just what scientists were saying, but how some people describe their own very personal experiences with plants, it all started to sound possible. Do you think plants have feelings? Do they feel joy or pain?
All of these tricky questions. Well, again, yes and no. It depends on what you mean by feeling and joy and all of that. And it also depends where you're expecting the plant to feel those things, if they do, the way in which you recognize them, so in a human way. Plants might have more joy than we do. It's just we don't know because we're not plants. So the only way that we express and know about joy is in our way, in our human way. My own personal experience would tell me that they definitely feel many things. You know, they're feeling bodies. We are feeling bodies.
Of course, scientists have always struggled when trying to explain the origins of consciousness. There's only so much you can glean through a lab experiment. But there are other ways to get to know a plant. More personal and intimate and even mind-altering ways. And this is where Monica Galliano's story takes a left turn, away from what she considers the limitations of both modern science and the Western worldview.
The worldview that I'm talking about are, for example, but not only, the indigenous worldview.
Yeah.
And why is that less valuable? Why that way of knowing is being completely wiped under the carpet as if it doesn't have anything to say? And what happened is that when you actually do explore those perspectives, and those worldviews require your experience. You can't just understand them by thinking about them. And so by experiencing them, you know, and the answer to that initial question, are plants conscious, then it becomes very simple. It's like, why are we even asking the question?
So I want to go there with you, because this is another piece of your story, and that is your experience working with shamans in indigenous cultures and the experience of taking ayahuasca and other psychoactive plants Why did you seek out those kinds of experiences?
I didn't. They seek me. So I just followed, as I said before.
Well, how did they seek you? They called you in some way?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, they just arrive in your life and you know that those are important doors that you need to open and you walk through or not. And I just simply decided to walk through. I had this weird series of dreams while I was in Australia doing my normal life, let's say. And it was a series of three dreams. And by the time the third dream came, it was very clear that the place that I was dreaming of, the people that I was dreaming of, were real people that were waiting somewhere in this reality, in this world. And next thing I know, I'm buying a ticket and I'm going to Peru. And my partner at the time is looking at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I have no idea, but I need to go. And I guess I find that as a scientist, this is the most scientific approach that I've ever had. There is something that is asking a question. The answer is already there and is waiting for you if you are prepared to open the door and cross through, and I did.
So what did you do in Peru?
Well, I ended up finding this place that was in my dream, for example, the first time I went. And there it was. It was just exactly the same hat as I saw it in my dream. It was the same man that I saw in my dream. And I was there for a while and I just worked with him and trying to learn as much as I could about myself, really.
This man with a hat was a plant shaman in the Amazon lowlands. Galeano calls him Don M. in her memoir, Thus Spoke the Plant. He told her there was a particular tree, a sacoba, that was trying to communicate with her. To learn how to listen, she drank a daily dose of medicine made from the tree's bark. She also took ayahuasca. And the tree started visiting her dreams and talking to her. All that happened a decade ago, and now Galeano says plants talk to her all the time without hallucinogens.
Yeah, they did then and they do all the time. And I'm not, you know, I don't have any strange psychological, psychiatric disorder.
I'm just so curious about how this worked for you. I mean, when you say the plant talked to you, was this in sort of a telepathic way? I mean, did you actually hear words? How did this work?
For all of us who had those experiences, it's very obvious. And in fact, most of the time when people haven't had the experience and you're trying to describe it, they struggle and it makes probably not much sense because, again, this kind of knowledge requires your participation, literally. I don't necessarily hear words as such. I don't hear like someone talking to me as if from the outside talking to me with sound. But yet, even that is not correct because inside my head, it does sound exactly like a conversation. And not only that, but I know it's not me. I know that some of the information that's been shared with me, there is no way that I would know about that stuff.
What you're saying is that these plants had information to tell you they were your teachers, is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep.
Were there specific things that they told you that, I don't know, took your life or your research, your work in different directions?
Yep. Some of the plants, as I have described in the book, told me exactly how wrong I was thinking about my experiments and how I should be doing them to get them to work. And I'm like, really? And I'm scribbling down without really understanding. And then when I go in the lab and I try what they say, and even then, you know, there is a part of me that doesn't really believe it. So I do the experiment as I'm told, I set it up and everything. And then it's like, nah, this is not working. And what an idiot. I was thinking that a plant from the other side of the world is going to tell me how to do my science. And then actually it took a little bit longer and a bit more attention to realize, oh, actually it is working. Oh, so even against my own skeptical mind of like, this is all, what am I doing? The plants already knew.
Remember that experiment with the peas that navigated a maze to find water? Galeano says she originally was trying to do that experiment with sunflowers.
At one point, the plant just turned up and just as flamboyantly as this said, "By the way, not sunflowers, peas."
And I'm like, the plant told you that.
And, you know, so people always think that, you know, when you do these experiences, you're supposed to understand the secrets of the cosmos and the universe and you become one with God or whatever else. No, my plants are usually quite practical. And they were right.
Monica Galliano is an evolutionary ecologist at the University of Sydney in Australia. And if that doesn't make you think differently about plants, I don't know what else could.